Hello and welcome to Florida Basketball Hour. I am Neil Blackman, Saturday Down South, joined by Eric Fawcett, who is celebrating Canadian Thanksgiving. They actually get that in October. I guess the leaves probably changed and stuff earlier there. I don't know about all that. But, you know, my favorite holiday is Thanksgiving. So happy Thanksgiving, Eric. And, yeah, practice underway. You know, Gators reportedly had their best practice that they've had in the golden era this week. It's always good to hear that because usually coaches are relatively honest with the press about practice because it's kind of a way to motivate players. So that's nice to hear. But yeah, man, what's been going on?
Yeah, Thanksgiving here in Canada. I would say it's significantly less of a big deal than Thanksgiving in America. I always appreciate some spirited debates about what's a better holiday between Christmas and Thanksgiving. I forget where you lie on that. Well, I guess it may be implied where you kind of find yourself on that one. But yeah, not so much a debate here. It's you know, probably the biggest holiday after Christmas, but not anywhere near. So, you know, I'm still exhausted already. Too many family obligations. Also snuck in a video today early for Patreon regarding Will Richard and a Will Richard breakdown. So, I'm a little bit tired. And yeah, there is a lot of stuff going on in the Florida basketball world that we should be talking about. So happy to be here.
Yeah, no, we're glad to have you. We're going to get some Patreon stuff up. Really after I record this show, I think the biggest news, I guess, I mean, there's a lot of places we could start, but in my mind, the biggest news is the decision by Edge Jarvis, to leave the Gators. He didn't actually participate in a single practice, took a leave of absence before practice started. And you know, went through all the summer stuff, went through all those workouts, got to Florida early, looked like he was going to have, you know, I think an impact, an all Ivy League player, a really, really, really good rebounder, a academic All-American. So not a guy that, huge brain, right? And steps away from the team. Like, I'm not going to tell our listeners I know what is going on. Maybe you do. A personal issue is all that we got, and that's all I know. And so, look, I applaud the kid for recognizing that some things are bigger than basketball and making this decision for himself. I wish him the best. I'm really bummed that he won't play at Florida.
Yeah, there's nothing that I'm at liberty to speak about. But as you can probably imagine, someone who decides to graduate at Yale and continue to play basketball and commit to Florida. I'll remind people that he committed to Florida quite early, back in March, which seems like forever ago. Like, you know, from a player who commits to Florida in March and then has to announce in October that he's going to be stepping away from basketball. Like, that's not a decision that comes lightly. And yeah, it's not like, oh, you know, he committed to the Gators a month ago and got to campus and changed his mind. This was something that, I'll just say that he was, excited to be at Florida. And I maybe some of the story will come out, maybe not. But yeah, it's something you just you mentioned, Neil, that some things are bigger than basketball. And he made a choice that I think going to come out to be definitely the right one. So it's disappointing, or like it's hard to transition right into the basketball implications for something like this. But it is disappointing from a basketball standpoint if you had to make the hard transition to that side of things. He is someone that it's kind of interesting. Like I will say this, and again, I don't like having to say this a minute after saying that he has to leave the Florida basketball program, but right. He was not someone I was particularly high on necessarily. I expressed, you know, when they got him so early in the off season, I kind of said, hey, why are you getting at, you know, is this a guy you should be, you know, hitching your wagon to in like the end of March? Like there's going to be a lot of players out there. But you know, it was always like, oh, well, this is a guy who's going to accept a role. We'll go hunting for more big name guys. But so, you know, I have some questions about what kind of upside he would have necessarily, but I also thought he was going to be a reliable floor kind of player. And I was someone who I thought was going to start. And I thought that perhaps the best orientation of this roster was going to be to have Jarvis start. So whether that was going to be 18 or 20 minutes, I would still say that would have been kind of my expectation, is that he would eventually work into a starting role, but be like a 18, 20 minute guy, not someone who takes a ton of shots, anything like that. To lose a guy like that before the season starts and in a situation where you're not going to be able to get another similar player to fill those minutes, I think it's definitely a basketball hit to the Gators, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like this is a guy who was at least going to be a very reliable person from a rebounding standpoint. And I thought, you know, he's obviously just looking at his career numbers or watching him play a little bit on video. He's a guy that could shoot, could get hot from the floor. And so, you know, there was going to be a game or two, maybe it would come in non-conference play, but hey man, those games matter to the NCAA tournament committee too. Like, you know, maybe it would come in those games where, you know, I could have seen a couple double doubles from him. And so, you know, yeah, I mean, Florida loses something. He was certainly a guy that we both discussed, I think, multiple times on the show as potential starter, with Tyrese Samuel. So, you know, it's a shame. I really wish him the best. I'm sure that that was not an easy decision, whatever the cause of it is. I'm totally no idea, folks, and will not speculate. But what I will say is, you know, I guess with these sorts of challenges, there are always opportunities. In Florida, it feels like Florida has, as a basketball program, had a lot of these, hey, man, this is a tough break. Let's see what kind of opportunities we can make out of this challenge type scenarios in the past few years, more than its fair share. You know, you look at Keontae Johnson and Colin Castleton, and they lose Edge Jarvis, obviously not basketball wise of that scale, but certainly a lot like losing a potential starter in football before the season starts. And of course, in basketball, there's only five starters. So, you know, impactful, I would say. And now, you know, what comes next? Is Florida, who we just talked about our show last week, some three around two, some, you know, less five out. Does that change? Is Florida more four around one now? Does this really open a pathway for a guy like Alex Condon, who's impressed in some practices, to start? Does it mean that Thomas Hawk is a guy that plays a lot as a freshman? You know, what impact does that have on Florida's front court? I think that's a fair basketball question to ask as we analyze that side of things.
Like, I feel bad saying, well, I didn't think the guy was elite, because yeah, it's a weird thing to say after he has to leave the program. But yeah, like I didn't think he was like an elite player. And I certainly would hope that Florida's scheme was not particularly reliant on his style of play or anything like that. So I think it's more of a standpoint of how the young guys with Thomas Hauck and Alex Kahn, and how those guys are going to be able to contribute right away, that they're going to be leaned on. I think it's pretty interesting that there was buzz about Hauck starting. There was buzz about Condon maybe being in the mix to start, now that there are media members in practice and you can just tell who the presumed starters are once you see a number of perimeter guys and Samuel out there. You can kind of presume what the starting group is going to be, and it's alternated between those guys. I mean, it's interesting to me that, and again, maybe it's for the purposes of practice, that they wouldn't want to put, like, even if the staff wanted Hanlogton and Samuel to start together, maybe that would be just too difficult in a practice 5-on-5 setting to put the two freshmen in the front court on the other side of the floor. Like, so maybe they just always split Hanlogton and Samuel, but like, it doesn't seem like those two are particularly in the plan to start together. So it looks like it'll be Tyrese Samuel and one of the freshmen. And I kind of like that Jarvis was like, could, you know, was comfortable with the ball a little bit, could shoot the ball a little bit, like do a little bit of, like, not great at anything, but it was also like, yeah, great, great. You know, that's not someone who you need to play through on the block or anything like that. But then I think you look at the two guys that could be playing in kind of his place as a starter. Well, Houck should bring a lot more shooting upside, in my opinion. Because again, Jarvis, I still would say is a below average shooter, though he's capable of making threes. And then Condon is someone who is probably a little bit more disruptive just defensively, just being just lengthwise. I'm not saying he's a better defender, because I'm going to take the veteran player over a freshman just most times. Maybe that could be wrong, but yep. Condon just with length and foot speed is just very disruptive. And then, of course, in transition, I think Condon could be. Could be very dangerous. So I do think it goes from someone like, again, these are still going to be, I'd say whoever starts at the four is going to be somewhat more of a complementary player, but I think you can look at the, like you can talk yourself into things being okay. If the freshmen are as good as have been advertised so far with the way the coaching staff has talked about them.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally fair. Like I said, the one thing that we saw or heard and shouldn't say saw, the thing that we heard from summer workouts was that Florida was much more competitive rebounding the ball and that Jarvis was contributing to that. I think that's probably where this, you know, stings the most from a basketball standpoint. I do think that if you rebound at the, well, that's annoying. I do think if you rebound the way that he did in the Ivy League, which we, you know, talked about, is a good league. It's a better league than some of Florida's transfers came from. You know, that's probably going to translate. His body, in terms of that, probably going to translate. And so, you know, yeah, I mean, now Florida's got to figure out a way to get some of that production with what is remaining on the roster. We know, you know, Alex Shimshek wasn't a guy that rebounds very well to begin with. He's hurt. We have no idea if Alex Condon can rebound at the college level yet. I guess we'll find out. Thomas Houck, you know, I'm sure is a guy that they hope develops into a player that can contribute on the glass. But, you know, right now as a front court kind of piece, he's an undersized freshman. So, that piece of it is tough. I think what it ultimately means is, you know, Tyrese Samuel is going to have to stay out of foul trouble more. Micah Hanlockton had 3.5 fouls, you know, per game average. That's not good. That was in the Sun Belt. That's got to be better. So that's kind of where you pick up the slack on that piece.
Sorry, I don't know if you heard that on the recording, but I'm looking through pronunciation guides because the Thomas, what we heard was Houck, but now appears to be Houck, even though he told Matt Norlander was Houck.
Is that from Denver now? Is it Houck now from Denver?
I don't know if you heard it because I accidentally played it because I thought it was going to be. but they've got what a lot of teams are doing now. And actually, I think this is the best way to do it. But Florida's site, they've got like the player saying his own name instead of just saying the like kind of like written out phonetically. And I'm pretty sure it's Thomas Houck. But you can see in some interviews he says his own name and it's like, hey, it's Thomas Houck from Perkiomen School or whatever it is. And then he told Norlander it was Houck, but now it's Houck. So anyways, I'm sure the pronunciations throughout the season will be we'll get it eventually. But I need to ask you about one more player. What I was going to say, Neil, was actually, I'll just ask you first and then I'm going to throw to another player, but who would be now your pick for the starting four position? And you can take it any way you want, whether it's what you would prefer personally or what you expect.
Oh man. I mean, I think it'll be Ty Samuel starting at the four. And Hanlockton and starting at center, you know. Okay. It's kind of where I'm at on that. You know, I don't know if Bennett Alexander is ready to slot in at the four yet. No, I'm kidding. You know, you never know. No, that's kind of where I'm I'm leaning. But there's also the chance that like it's legitimately for round one or something like that, and it's Will Richard starting at four and Ty Samuel starting at the five, you know?
Well, and this transitions into what I was going to ask you about, because I think that a lineup that features Will Richard at the four would likely be due to the fact that it would be Riley Kugel, and we'll say at the three. We're getting into a little bit of semantics if you've got this many guards on the floor, but it'd be something like Tyree Samuel, Will Richard, Riley Kugel, Walter Clayton, and Zion Pullen. However, of course, the news came out that Zion Pullen will be suspended for the first three games of the season. And I'm curious what you think about the implications that might have. You know, he's someone that I think we both thought could slash should start to begin the season. That question gets answered for us. And for a team with so many new players, some of those early games could really, really matter in terms of establishing rotation. So what do you think about how this could impact or not the Zion Pullen role on this team?
Yeah, I mean, look, he's going to miss the Virginia game, which I think we've talked about as a pretty important resume game, as weird as that is. You know, it's one that, because I don't see a world where Virginia's bad, right? Like, I feel like at worst, they're a bubble team, and then Florida has a game against team that's also a bubble team that the committee can look at. And now a guy who looked like he was profiling as sort of the sixth man, and who, you know, a couple people inside the program said, hey, that's where he's played the most. They're not sure that that's what's going to be happening, because he's certainly comfortable playing as the starting point guard. But you know, they liked him in that six man role that you and I had kind of identified as maybe being his best option. That was reassuring to hear. And now I don't know, like, his first game will be Florida State. And if Florida does beat Virginia now without Edge Jarvis and Zion Pullen, who are two pretty important pieces, you know, they'll be 3-0. And how much do you really want to screw with that against Florida State in game three, knowing, you know, I guess you're at home. That's probably helpful. Not like, hey, here's a road environment, go figure it out. You played at UC Riverside, and the toughest road environment you played at ever was like a bye game against UCLA. But, you know, I don't know, man. I mean, I'm not saying it eliminates Zion Pullen. I mean, that would be a preposterous take. But I do think you get into this situation where, do they wait a couple games? You know, does it mean that we don't see a ton of Zion Pullen until maybe, you know, they get back from the NIT? And even when that happens, like, they've got Wake Forest on the 29th of November. Or is Pullen so good and so important that, you know, they just start giving him a lot of minutes against Florida State at home because they're going to need him in those two games at the NIT? I don't know. But it is interesting. And Florida will be playing limited without a ton of proven pieces against Virginia in what I think is a big game.
Yeah, I think it's a massive game because, and again, I know we have debated this already and may continue to debate this. But I don't think Florida's non-conference schedule is particularly challenging. Neil is on the other side of that debate. We will see how it shakes out. But yeah, like I don't, and again, I'm not even saying it's, And to be clear, when I say that, like, I don't think Florida has a challenging non-conference schedule, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. They should get plenty of challenging games in the SEC. And I don't think it would have been wise for the Gators to go and schedule five games against top 10 teams and then go into the SEC. Like, I don't think it would have been wise. So I don't necessarily have an issue with the way Florida scheduled, but because I don't think that their non-conference is particularly challenging, like, they can't afford many slip ups. And again, losing to Virginia, I don't believe would be a bad loss or a devastating loss, but there's a chance it's a quad two. Again, I don't even know where I quite, they're just good. They're going to be right on the cusp, projected by Bart Torvik to be right on the cusp. Neil thinks that's a poor evaluation of Virginia.
I do.
We will see. But yeah, I do think it's a very big game. And you know, and I'll say this, I wrote about Florida's non-conference schedule and some of the projections. Actually, and I'm not sure what you would think about this, Neil, but someone pointed out just on the Gator Country forums, they're like, oh, so like we will be, you know, someone who's very into the betting side of things said, oh, like, so the Gators are going to be favored in every non-conference game. And I never thought, I didn't really, you know, I don't really think that way. But I was like, oh, I think that that's, you know, there's a good chance that that actually is the case. Like the Gators could be favored in every non-conference game. So there's a chance that they go into a Virginia game favored to win, not just by the betting markets, but even by projections. And, you know, if you're favored to win and you don't, that's going to look not great, whether in perception of the fans or more importantly, metrics. So I think it's a big one. And yeah, not having Pullen, not having Jarvis, that is going to hurt, especially someone going against the kind of length and the conservative defense of Virginia. Someone who can kind of pass over the top of that defense is pretty big. I just like, that just seems like a game where Pullen would have been very, very effective. So yeah, it's going to be interesting. I even think we saw last year, there was a little bit of the Gators went into the season with an idea of who they wanted to play and who they wanted to start. And it took a little while for guys to break into that, whether it was a Kwesi Reeves or a Trey Bonham and of course, like those guys ended up eventually falling out of the rotation. But like, I do think it was notable that like Florida started a certain way and it was kind of tough for them to change up what they felt. And then when Bonham started going off, it was like, hey, where was this guy? And I think you could even argue when Riley Kugel started to go off, hey, where was this guy earlier? Couldn't this guy have been used more earlier? So there's a chance to me that there's a slow drip of Pullen once he gets back eligible to play that we maybe end up being like, hey, I get he was suspended the first three games, but like he should have been thrown in a lot earlier. But again, it's a veteran player. It's one that I think that the Gators are higher on than Kwesi Reaves and Trey Bonham and whatever other, even Riley Kugel at the time. I don't think they knew exactly what they had. I don't think anyone knew what exactly Riley Kugel was or what he'd be, but it's going to be big. Don't think the Gators have much room to mess around and lose any games. I don't think they're at risk of losing any of the two bye games while Pullen is gone. But that Virginia one becomes very, very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think Jarvis hurts in that game too. I mean, he hit, 12 and 7 against Kentucky last year at Rupp, and was able to kind of extend the defense a little bit, which is nice against the pack line. They're going to stay disciplined anyway, but if he hits 1-3, then at least they're thinking about it. You know, and I think just little things like that add up in a game against Virginia where they're so well coached that your margin for error is really small. Because they, and I know I made a big deal of the Keke Clark thing, and I think it is a big deal, right? And that's why I thought it was such a smart game to schedule when they scheduled it. But I also loved the idea of having like fifth year senior Zion Pullen on the floor against Virginia's new point guard, right? And now, you know, that's not a thing. So yeah, I mean, I think it raises the stakes, raises the challenge of that game. I mean, it's a huge game. I think they play two huge games in Charlotte, like we've talked about. And, you know, this one, the first one got a lot harder. Also, before we like forget to say so, cause I think this is an important point. Fuck the NCAA. you know, and that might be the first F-bomb dropped in 6 years of Florida basketball. Seriously. Okay. I mean, this is the tweet I sent out was, and I forget who tweeted, like I retweeted somebody. I think it was Perry, who's awesome. But I said, this is essentially like suspending a business student because they like attended an invite only event from Goldman Sachs. Like, this is the most ridiculous, rule. And I will stand by that analogy. I mean, it's really preposterous. Now, I know that Florida was aware of this when they brought Zion Pullen in. I know that they were aware that the suspension was likely when he committed. None of that, like, means that the NCAA is right or that Florida was wrong to bring in Zion Pollan. I just think it's kind of important to point out how preposterous this is.
Yeah, like this is what I struggle with a little bit, because on one hand, I'm like, yeah, I think that players should be able to go and play in Portsmouth. And if they have eligibility back, like, yeah, I don't think it's that bad. I don't think it's the type of thing that the NCAA should be particularly concerned with spending time and resources over. But at the same time, it's like, it's a pretty cut and dry rule that it's not allowed. Like, for anyone who doesn't know, so again, if you haven't heard this or whatever, there is an event that is usually for players that have exhausted their NCAA eligibility. They go to this event called the Portsmouth Invitational. And so it's all graduated college players. It's a tournament. There's like a combine style testing situation. And like pretty much every NBA team is there. This is usually a little bit more of like G League caliber guys. It's also like the premier recruiting event for European leagues. So a lot of European teams are there. So it is a really good event. And again, this is normally your guys that are, yeah, like, I think Flanders Fleming was there. Like, you know, it's like that caliber and a little bit better. So, yeah, it's a really good event. But again, it was always it started many, many years ago when players had 4 years of eligibility and players seldom got years back. So it was very easy to say, oh, this guy was in college for 4 years. He's out. Now he's looking to find out where he could play basketball next as a pro. So there's really like there was no need for this event to be NCAA certified. And that, of course, got a little bit muddier with the extra year due to COVID. So, yeah, it's one of those things that, like, just playing in this event, is that something that's so heinous that the NCAA should level punishments on players? Like, no, I don't think so. But at the same time, like, there's been multiple players who have gone to Portsmouth and tried to come back to college and gotten suspended. And it's been very cut and dry. It happened literally last year with Courtney Ramey, who was at Texas and ended up transferring to Arizona. So like there should be zero surprise. I would be very interested to know what Pollan knew or what his camp knew, because this is one of those things where if you asked a lot of people in the know, it'd be like, yeah, he's for sure getting suspended. There's no way around it. But I just wonder, and even then, like a lot of people have been like, oh, well, why didn't Portsmouth tell players that this is what happened? And I don't know if they did or not, but it doesn't really matter because players should know at this point if they've got quote unquote agents in their ears or anything like those guys need to know. So when there's like so much precedent and like one guy every year has gotten suspended for it over the last 4 years, I'm kind of like, well, like Pollan should have known what he was doing, or someone should. So, you know, maybe Portsmouth didn't tell him and they should have. Maybe someone in Pollan's camp said, hey, there's this really great event, you should go to it. Maybe he didn't know, he should have known. So yeah, like in the scheme of things that the NCAA does that I don't agree with, this one is not the highest on my personal list. But yeah, it's something that I think it's funny. I mean, like, I'm going to say maybe it's something they should change, but then we probably get back to most players playing 4 years of eligibility again, and it's probably not going to be an issue until there's another pandemic or something that gives a universal year back. So, yeah, it's I would be interested a little bit more of the story, but it also doesn't, like, really matter. The story might be as simple as Pollan thinking, like, yeah, you know, I thought it was going to be a pro. Changed, like, or, like, maybe he's like, yeah, you know, I was, like, you know, sitting on the fence. Thought the worst case scenario is I get suspended 3 games. You know, I have Florida lining up to try to recruit me. Like, what's missing 4 games? You know, it's not like, you know, my NIL isn't by the game. I don't get game checks. Like, you know, like maybe it was that simple that he's like, well, like what the worst case punishment. Then the last thing I'll say too is like, there's a bunch of people that are like, oh, the NCAA, like this is what the NCAA is like wasting their time and resources on. Like to an extent, yes, but I bet the investigation was all of like 35 minutes. Like, you know, like,
oh yeah,
because there's precedent.
Sure.
You know, I don't know. Like, I don't even know. And I'd be interested, but I don't know if Pollan/Florida even appealed or tried. I think that it would have been a tough one to appeal. So I don't know. It is what it is. And it's like, clearly even if Pollan said, thank you, UC Riverside, really enjoyed my time. With that being said, I'm entering the transfer portal. Oh, and by the way, I'm going to be suspended for probably 1 to 5 games. Would that have changed any teams recruiting him? Not one bit. Yeah. So, you know, still happy Florida got him.
Yeah, no, of course. And like I said, Florida knew that this was likely before he committed. You know, the Gators knew that this was coming down the pipe. They hoped that the NCAA would change the rule. That was, you know, and that, unlike the Edge Jarvis thing, I can speak on authoritatively. I think that they really anticipated that they would change the rule because it's coming, Eric. It's like the Supreme Court is going to rule that players can organize themselves. That is going to happen in the very, very near future. It may happen as soon as the next Supreme Court session. And when they rule that, things are going to open up. And John Calipari, whose offense is out of the Stone Age, is going to look really smart for his ability to see the big picture as it relates to kids, you know, not offense. It's like the opposite, right? Like John Calipari, the CEO. It's like Jurgen Klinsmann, the U.S. national team coach, who was a great CEO and the worst manager in the history of the known world. I mean, Cal has been advocating for years that players should be able to organize themselves and have summer leagues. And what's the difference between that and these foreign tours that players go on, right? Like everybody goes somewhere now. People go to the Bahamas. People go to Edmonton, Canada. I don't know if anybody goes to Edmonton, Canada. But
yes.
And there you go.
Shout out to Montana State.
There you go.
Appreciate you making the trip.
You know, Georgia goes to Rome. Auburn went to Israel last year, right? Virginia went to Rome the year before Georgia did. There is zero reason that the players shouldn't just be able to organize themselves on their own and make money. You know, the SEC All-Stars would be awesome. You know, barnstorm the country and play games against one another. They should totally be able to do that and organize. And I love the idea of a summer league because it prevents nonsense like this. The NCAA doesn't need, you know, and look, I don't want to, I think you're absolutely right to say like it's cut and dry and it doesn't, it's not a waste of resources. It's just that the rule is stupid. You know, we dealt with it last year with Courtney Ramey. And so now we're suspending basketball players for playing basketball. And to me, that just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. And I don't think we need to control what they do. Like if they get to play basketball in Rome, and a scout can go to a game in Rome, why does it matter that they go to something that's organized and play? Like the rule is ridiculous. And I think, you know, we're headed toward a place now where that's going to stop. And the cleanest and easiest way to do it is going to be because of the Supreme Court, which just says, hey, college athletes can organize, boom, end of discussion. But, you know, I just wanted to get fuck the NCAA out there. Cause I, at some point, like this nonsense has to stop. I'm not saying that, you know, Pullen was wronged. He got the exact same suspension that every player who's gotten a Portsmouth Invitational suspension got. So it's not like the NCAA was like out to get Zion Pullen. Like Eric said, a 35 minute might be generous on the investigation, right? You know, right. It's just the rule is stupid.
Well, like to be honest, I'm not saying it would have worked, but the best defense would have been honestly, NCAA caseworker, I'm from UC Riverside. And you know what? Historically, we haven't had a lot of pros. And I got the opportunity. I got asked to go to this event. And to be honest, I had no idea it wasn't NCAA certified. And, you know, I'm not saying it would have worked, but that would like, and that's just like the biggest thing I'm just genuinely curious by is like, did Pullen personally know? I just hope that. And again, like you would be shocked at, like, again, one thing that from writing about Florida for a number of years, from working with teams and working with players, meeting players and meeting parents, like sometimes you'll be shocked at how little they know about college basketball, essentially.
Yeah.
It like, especially again, like, yeah, I like Portsmouth Invitational a lot. I don't think that, I don't think Denzel Aberdeen's dream one day is like, man, you know, I'm really just dreaming about the bright lights in Portsmouth. I'm really dreaming about, it's like, you, like there's players on Florida's roster. I mean, hey, you saw the, you probably watched the video when they were announcing the the SEC opponents. by putting their hands in that blind box and like trying to decipher where it was. And, you know, half of these players couldn't name teams in the SEC because they're from overseas and haven't spent a lot of time caring about college basketball in their lives. Yeah, they don't know anything about Portsmouth. So if they get asked in a couple of years, like, hey, there's a chance that if Portsmouth hasn't changed by then, they just didn't know any better. So, yeah, I just hope that Pullen didn't get bad information and was shocked to find out that he was going to be suspended wherever he went. But I am curious, actually, though, just changing the subject slightly, what you just alluded to, Neil. For those of you who don't know, John Calipari's been on this for a couple of years, that college basketball teams should be playing non-conference games in the summer. Kind of just citing that, you know, you see that the NBA has become kind of a 12-month-a-year sport with player movement and stuff like that. And it just seems like at any time, like people who are NBA fans can follow the game year round. College basketball is not at that level, although the transfer portal has made the spring a lot more interesting for diehards. So like John Calipari thinks that he should be able to schedule games with Michigan in, you know, I don't actually know the calendar he suggested, but sometime in the summer. What do you think about that from a college basketball standpoint? Cause I would say that's obviously, that is different than like players being able to organize and saying like, hey, let's go barnstorm with the SEC All-Stars.
Yeah. I think barnstorming type stuff is more likely. Cause I think what'll happen is just coaches are going to want to have their hands on their kids. And like, I think they like these European, they can justify like, hey, we go to Israel, we go to Italy, they can recruit with it. We're going to go here next summer, come and play with us. And, you know, the first thing you do will be to go to London for 3 weeks and play some games. Like, I don't know how much coaches are like, you know, going to be jazzed about, hey, let me organize this game. And maybe I'm wrong. You know, maybe we're going to organize these summer league games against LSU, Jacksonville, and Northern Kentucky and see how it goes. Right. Like, I kind of feel like the barnstorming thing is a little more likely just because I think it's all going to be player driven, Eric, and players want to go where they can be seen, like Portsmouth. So, you know, that's kind of my thought on it. And so I still think it'll still be a little separate from what Coach Cal has talked about. But I do think Cal is right that summer basketball is coming to college basketball in some shape or form. And I do think the Supreme Court's decision coming soon is going to expedite that.
Yeah, well, I kind of do still think it's different. I just think that like Calipari's big thing has just been like, hey, we don't want to be playing marquee non-conference college basketball games while college football's going on. And
yeah,
because, you know, like Calipari's at a football school now, so I hear. So he's, you know, battling for relevancy and not staying or whatever. But I don't know.
Too soon.
I don't know enough about college football to make those jokes, but
too soon. Yeah.
Atmosphere looked pretty lively in the last one I saw, but I can kind of see the spirit behind like, hey, if Florida is playing Purdue in like on July 27th, like suddenly that's like, there's going to be a lot more eyes on that, I'd imagine, than I guess I should have compared it with a non-conference game. Like if Florida played Virginia in July, like there's a chance, I should say for sure, there's a chance that registers a lot more than during college football season. So I can kind of see where the idea is at. That is one of the challenges that faces college basketball is that the fact that their non-conference portion of the season really overlaps with college football. But yeah, I'm not sure this summer basketball situation is something that would really particularly help. But I know a lot of coaches are not going to be interested in building their roster out of the portal, which I do think another change will happen where the portal period is half the length that it currently is, and graduate transfers won't be able to put their name in anytime like they're currently able to, and rosters will be decided by I still think there's going to be a point fairly quickly when rosters are kind of locked in by like the end of April, but I don't think a lot of coaches will want to have 10 full practices and then play games that matter. And they won't want to have 10 practices and play games that don't matter if they're glorified exhibitions because they take place in the summer. So, and again, like it would be kind of wild if Florida plays Virginia in the summer and suddenly it's Selection Sunday in March and these people have to look at games that took place like 9 months prior, including a large break in the fall. Like it's just, yeah, it would get a little bit messy. I am actually thankful as much as I laugh about a lot of stuff that John Calipari does and says and how his teams play, and I can go on. I do think that he understands marketing. Cool. That is for sure. Oh, and I do think that college basketball is like crisis adjacent when it comes to people caring about it other than diehards. And I am definitely open. And I do think the 3-on-3 tournament that happens at the Final Four with graduated players where different leagues take on each other is pretty cool. But it would be nothing near as cool as if it was the SEC playing the Big Ten in an all-star game in the summer with players that were going to return to college. And could you imagine if, I mean, this isn't the best example because it's not like Michigan's loaded with players this year, but can you imagine if there was a SEC versus Big Ten all-star game and, you know, these guys are competing at a high level and there's money at stake from NIL. And then suddenly, oh, now we get to see Zion Pullen versus Doug McDaniel part two. Remember back in the summer when those guys were going, you know, back and like that would suddenly make for storyline and stuff like that. So, the barnstorming approach of like a little tour of these leagues representing. And if there's like, oh, look, here's like a team from the MAC or like, oh, here's, you know, the HBU All-Stars, like that stuff would be very cool, I think. So, and that would be a nice convergence of players being able to make money for their name and also like, you know, promoting the sport and getting more interest in the sport.
Yep. No, I agree. Cal knows marketing and Cal knows kids. That's how he, you know, I think he knows kids. You don't recruit the way he does if you don't know kids, because those kids hear the negative recruiting about how they're going to go somewhere. And, you know, we talk all so much about positionless basketball now. That's like one of our new buzzwords. If you talk basketball and you know, they hear the negative buzzword systemless basketball with Kentucky. So, but Cal still manages to land them. Speaking of landing things, I don't know how eloquent this particular transition was, but you can land yourself exclusive opportunities with Florida Athletes if you join the Gataverse, Gataverse.io. Gataverse is an innovative approach to NIL that connects fans, athletes, and merchants with digital and physical collectibles. Verify community membership and grant access to exclusive privileges, VIP events, rewards, and experiences. They have some great ones with gymnastics right now, some really cool ones with people like Trevor Etienne on the football program. So a lot going on there. I know they just signed a bunch of volleyball players, which I think is really cool, Eric. And so everybody make sure that you check out Gataverse.io. That's one of Florida Basketball Hour's sponsors. They will be having an event this weekend for the homecoming game. As we record on a Friday, you may listen to this after that happens, but always cool to see the kind of stuff that's going on, especially with Florida really doing well in the NIL space now with Florida Victorious, the Gatorverse, just all those things are important, especially when you have big recruits visit. Florida did have a cancellation, I guess a postponement is how we're talking about the Sammy Yene situation, the visit postponed. Some debate, I will say. Look, I haven't talked to anybody inside the Florida staff about the NA recruitment. So not in a while. Everything I'm getting is from his camp, Compass Prep. I'm free to speak open about it. There's some debate about whether or not it was postponed late or whether it's been postponed a while. I have seen reporting saying it's been postponed a while. That's not the story the NAs are telling. So, you know, take that as you will. I think Arizona is now the leader there, Houston backing off a little bit. You know, I think he's a good player. I think he's a unique player. I think he's a guy that is physical and super athletic, but I also think he has good touch. I think he has a nice, diverse offensive skill set. I think that his shot is improving, which we saw all summer if you watched him or read about him and his performances in the summer. I think he's kind of a prototypical physical foreman in the SEC. And you know, I'm surprised. Our friend Shirley Donovan is pretty surprised that Florida isn't just jumping up and down and saying, hey, local kid, commit to us. So it's interesting. If and look, maybe because I haven't talked to people on the Florida side, and this is why I hate recruiting conversations, and I know Eric hates them even more than me, maybe it's just postponed because Florida feels like it needs to be postponed a little bit. But usually when you do that in recruiting, it's because you don't want a commitment yet, and you're seeing what else can happen. And here's what I will say about that. And this may be my longest rant on Florida Basketball Hour in a while, and we'll just let Dr. Fawcett respond to it. And I'm trying to do this a little bit out of the goodness of my heart for Eric, too, because I know how much he hates recruiting. Florida's strategy on recruiting appears to be, let's go after elite kids and take big swings. Look, I respect the hell out of that. All right, let's be clear. I think that's great, and I think, you know, I started a podcast about Florida basketball, so obviously I think the program is really, you know, prestigious and cool. You know, otherwise not wasting my time. That said, you know, Alex Lloyd hits me up and says, yeah, man, Florida's got a lot of banners and that place is dope, but I need to see it from the staff. And that's a five-star kid in South Florida. Look, I love that they're taking big swings, but these are things that I'm hearing from people. And so take another big swing. Got a huge, huge recruit coming next week. I think Jacob Rudner was the first to report that, you know, they're getting a five-star forward that might reclassify, you know, on campus next week. I think that's great. You're getting an official from the Boozer Twins. Hey, why not? They're from Florida. You know, let's get them on campus and see what happens. There's no rule on official visits anyway. They're not limited anymore. Get everybody you can on campus and see if somebody bites. Ty Golden's in yesterday to see that young man.
Jaden Quaintance.
I was afraid to pronounce his last name wrong. Thank you, Eric.
I am unsure about that pronunciation, but it flows well off the tongue.
Yeah, Jaden Quaintance. So, you know, Florida's in on him. I think he's going to Kentucky. I think, and I think that's unfortunate because Florida's NIL situation is in fact very good for basketball, thanks to Gary Condren, Gail Lemerand, and the France family, the people that own NASCAR. Like, they're good, man. Hugh Hathcock, they're good. They will put together packages for these kids. But Kentucky can back up the Brinks truck for that guy, right? So unless he just falls in love with Todd Golden the way Mike Miller fell in love with Billy Donovan, you know, I don't know. So my point isn't that they're wrong to take big swings, but I do wonder when you have a couple four-stars in your backyard. One, I get. I understood the Ryan Jones thing because of the lingering persistent injuries. That makes a ton of sense to me. This staff's been snake bit by that. Florida's been snake bit by it. You know, let's not worry as much about that. I also didn't think Jones's game fits what Florida says they want to do as a staff. And I choose my words carefully there. What they say they want to do as a staff, Sammy Yenea is a much better fit. So I hope he comes back and I hope he commits to Florida because that's where he wants to go.
No, that's very interesting for sure. Here's the one thing that I do wonder about these days with recruiting at the high major level, and not necessarily just with Florida, but generally, is like, I completely understand the star hunting approach, just because, and I think, like, honestly, a perfect example is Mike White. Why did things not work out for Mike White at Florida? Like many things. But I think a big part of it was from a player acquisition standpoint. And well, I'll say this. I Well, yeah, from a player acquisition standpoint, Mike White hit a lot of singles and doubles. He didn't hit home runs, and he wasn't a good enough coach to make up for that.
Right.
And there was a, and he had a lot of takes where we were like, oh, that's a good, like, that's a good get. Like, oh, like, you know, Flanders right. Fleming, that's a, you know, that's a good take. Like, oh, Myron Jones, that's a good take. Oh, Brandon McKissick, yeah, that's a good take. And all those guys were good takes. They were fine takes, but he never hit any home runs with talent. And, right. you know, you could argue what he got one with Trey Mann and he couldn't utilize it. And, you know, argue that he had, you could say it was a home run with Colin Castleton actually, but wasn't able to utilize it. But I understand, like, to this point in Florida's player acquisitions. And again, we will see, because we'll see what Thomas Houck is and we'll see what Alex Conan is. But like, I like a lot of the guys Florida got. I like a lot of the guys Florida got in the transfer yeah. portal. I yeah. still think, and we discussed this even when we're talking about who has the best transfer class in the country, I don't think there's home runs.
Yeah.
Necessarily. And that could be the case, but that is my fear right now is mm-hmm. that the Gators have a lot of singles and doubles and they don't have home runs. And unless Florida's coaching staff is elite from a scheme standpoint, that might not be enough. So I can kind of understand why the coaching staff was looking at Ryan Jones and Yine and saying, like, you know, this is okay, but at some point we need NBA players. Like we need to go star hunting. Now, what happens if in a couple of years they don't end up landing those guys? We know that Florida's yet to land one of those guys. Then that would be a problem in itself. And you're probably thinking, oh, you know, you wish you took, let's say they don't end up taking Yine. If they miss on a bunch of star talent, they might be really wishing they got that guy. So I can kind of understand it. I can also understand that they're bringing back a lot of front court talent, as in a lot of players that could be talented, to next year's team. And they could say, well, like, if we get a player that's roughly top 70 ranked, is that player going to want to sit on the bench for a while and, yep. you know, maybe compete for 6 to 8 minutes a game? And are those players want to stick around? I also understand, you know, I've talked to a lot of coaches around the country that everyone says, oh, like, why don't you keep guys around and develop? And they say, oh, the players don't want to be developed. You know, they yeah. don't want to, they don't want to come and not play. So yeah. I can understand both sides of the coin. I think it was pretty, you know, a lot of people said, oh, you know, when the Gators got Quez Glover, there's a guy that'll want to stick around for 4 years and develop. Like, he didn't want to do that. He wanted to play right away. And hey, maybe that worked out. That move might've worked out for him.
We thought he would.
Totally. And he was a player that vocally was like, no, I should be playing more right now. And that's not the opportunity here. And so, yeah. So I can kind of also understand coaches that think, like, hey, we would like to develop 100-ish ranked player recruits, but like, those players aren't interested in that. So it is a little bit of a challenging one. And I do say all the time, like, you know, something I've said on this podcast, and I think this, I'll have to back this up now, is if you're going to win at the high major level, you need NBA talent. And yep. NBA talent is still recruited a lot more than it is got in the portal. And while I like Sammy Yine, I don't know if I think he's an NBA player. Ryan Jones, I would be fairly comfortable in saying, is not an NBA player. Right. Not a hot take. So, yeah, you know, I can kind of understand the other side of the coin. I will also say with Jaden Quaintance, you mentioned you think he's going to Kentucky, completely reasonable. The common talk is that overtime elite, like Quaintance, who's the number 7 ranked player in the country, he took an official visit to South Florida because he wasn't getting recruited a lot because everyone thought he was going to not overtime elite, G League Ignite. So the one thing that I will say is also very important, and this is why I would back up the Brinks truck. If true, I've heard this from a couple of people that know this stuff that are NBA draft guys. So Quaintance is very young for the 2024 class, and he technically wouldn't be able to enter the NBA draft until 2026. So if you landed him, you could have the top 7 or the 7th ranked player in the class with major NBA upside for 2 seasons.
Right.
So now that is a guy that, and again, I'm not saying it's going to come down to just NIL, because a lot of people have NIL. You'd have to, you know, convince him for other reasons. But with Quaintance, if he is truly someone that you're going to have on campus for 2 years, like, those are the guys that you know, do whatever possible to make happen. So I really actually do like those swings. Here's the last thing.
Yeah, I do too.
And then here's the last thing. Last thing before I swing back to you.
Yeah.
Like Shimchick, little bit of a swing. Condon, little bit of a swing. Hauk, you know, he was ranked when I think that they got him. He was a 3-star outside of the top 150. I'm not saying it's like a massive, like this isn't a Toon Gatkick situation, but if you wanted to say it's somewhat of a swing, you know, you could argue it. Like Florida has a lot of guys that are not on an NBA trajectory traditionally already on the roster. And maybe if you didn't have three guys like that already that are young already on the roster, maybe you're more likely to get the Sammy Yene and still go star hunting for another frontcourt player. Maybe you take Jones Yene and you know, still have so like Florida's already kind of taken their developmentally type guys. So I wonder if now they realize, okay, we've got our, you know, guys that we think are going to be on campus for 3-4 years, 5 years, maybe Shimchick gets a year back or something, 'cause he hardly played last year. I could understand them going after the star ending, but yeah, it seems like you've got a good response.
No. I mean, like I agree with you. I mean, I like the big swings. You know what else I like? Because I don't want to sound like I'm negative. I mean, I just think – I don't think Yanny is that much of a swing at the college basketball level.
Totally.
Right? Like, I think he's a guy who – he could be an all-SEC player and not play in the NBA. You know? And those guys are actually kind of rare. So that's why I think he's kind of a take. And, you know, Billy Donovan used to say, trust your plan and process, but also trust offer sheets. And like when Houston and Arizona are sniffing around, like you have a player, right? Houston, I think, is going in a different direction, but that's fine. What I'll say to Eric's point that I like is, yes, you have to have that high level, high end NBA talent. I think, you know, Keontae Johnson was probably a big hit for White too, just because everybody was in on him late.
Yeah, that's fair.
But you know, other than that, yeah, I mean, they hit a lot of doubles, but there weren't many triples or homers. Isaiah Brown's another guy I think is a Sammy Yene type who I think is going to be very good. I don't know if he's an NBA basketball player. But what I don't get is if you're done taking flyers, if you're done with Shimchick, who I think will be in and out of Florida's program, if I'm being really candid, which I think I've just been real candid today, so let me keep it up. Like why is Oliver Ryu visiting? Okay, so that's point A. Like I don't understand.
Can you please describe him to those who may who haven't been following their
underlying high school recruits? My guess is he's visiting because he's taller than Jack's Beanstalk. I mean he's 7'6", and maybe he's visiting because he's at IMG. Malik Grady sent me a smart DM. It was like maybe they're trying to mine like IMG and just get a foothold in there, and so they're like, hey, Oliver Ryu, come visit. We'll take you as a preferred walk-on. I don't know. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Like, I don't think that – I think Sammy Yene is a way better basketball player. He's just a foot shorter. You know, that's fine. But I want to get back to my point about what I also like so I don't end up being like wet blanket on Todd Golden guy because I'm not that. I just think – I like that there's a strategy. And I hate that the bar is that low, but like, what was one of the biggest complaints that Florida basketball hour, like Eric and I had the last 2 years of the White era? It's like, it just didn't understand what they were doing from a roster construction or recruiting standpoint. Florida seems to have a strategy and it's clearly we're going to go and be aggressive in the transfer portal, right? We're going to fight for Tyler Perry. We're going to, you know, go after Walter Clayton. You know, we're going to take some aggressive swings in the transfer portal. Edge Jarvis, quick commitment, notwithstanding, right? That's the kind of must strategy. Like, we're going to trust who we get in the portal. We're going to go after Florida, I think was – I read on Doster had a tweet that Florida was, like, fifth in portal offers. So, like – or, you know, that's pretty good, right? Like, Florida's – they're going after it in the portal. And then what's the second prong of the must strategy? It's like land elite talent. I just need to see Florida actually land somebody. Right. And so it's cool to take all these big swings, but if you're not going to hit, which Florida hasn't yet, right? Like Asanuel miss, who's another kid that they recently missed on that they took a huge swing at. I forget. VJ Edgecombe just visited, you know, maybe they'll get him. I know the situation with Duke's class may actually inform what happens with VJ Edgecombe. And there's no reason why he can't stay in state and play for the Gators if Duke doesn't come calling, right? Billy Donovan got his fair share of guys that way. You know, there was no shortage of Billy Donovan phone calls to Grayson Allen, and he went to Duke. And I think a lot of Florida fans would have a much different opinion of Grayson Allen if he went to Florida than they do because he played in Durham. You know, just like they have a much different opinion of Patrick Young. We love you, Pat. You know, because he went to Florida and not Duke, right? But I think the point is you have to hit some of these if that's going to be your strategy. If your strategy is we're going all in on Musselman, that's awesome, but must lands those players. And so when a guy like Alex Lloyd, a good kid that plays at Westminster, which is an up-and-coming program, you know, with a great coach in Aaron Woloff, when he says, I need to see it from Florida staff, like, okay, cool. This roster needs to do well, because I think then maybe you're not just selling a golden smile, pun intended.
Well, and, you know, if I could cite a very good football article I read really recently about Florida football and the way that you bring in talent. And there was a quote regarding the fact that, like, kids these days don't really care that Florida beat up on Georgia in football 25 years ago. Like, we're now at the point in basketball, and I'm sorry to the diehards, maybe older fans listening that know the rich history that Florida basketball has. Like, a lot of these kids were not watching basketball in 2014, even when Florida had their Final Four. If they heard this podcast and they just heard a Patrick Young reference from Neil, they don't know who that is. And that is not all that long ago, but to kids that are 16 and 17,
yeah,
that, you know, that might as well have been 1994.
Yeah.
So for you to say, or to hear from Alex Lloyd, oh man, like there's a rich tradition at Florida that I respect, essentially, like, you're only going to get that from local kids, because you don't have to travel far for people to say, well, I don't know, you know, I'm 17 years old and I can't remember the last time I've seen Florida play in an NCAA tournament game. You know, and again, that's not on Golden. That's and again, that's a slight exaggeration. I know it wasn't that long ago the Florida made an NCAA tournament, but it wasn't like they made a whole bunch of noise. There's a better chance, you know, there's been elite kids that said, oh yeah, like that, you know, something they kind of joke about was like, oh, they remember Florida losing to Oral Roberts because that was the biggest storyline of Florida in the NCAA tournament. Like, if you're actually to say, what is the biggest story about Florida? Right. Like, if you were to plug in your SEO keywords and say Florida and NCAA tournament, the biggest story in like 10 years is Florida losing to, well, not 10 years, the Elite Eight would be it. But like, since the Elite Eight, is Florida losing to Oral Roberts.
Yeah.
In rather embarrassing fashion.
Or so, Keontae Johnson going to play for Kansas State.
You're right. So yeah, like, if you have local kids, like, that's another advantage you have, that you've got kids that do understand the program pedigree, whereas some kids not all that far away would not know Florida as a school with much basketball prestige. So yeah, so that's a very interesting anecdote you brought. And yeah, it's going to be interesting to see if Florida is going to be able to land top high school talent, or if it's going to be a situation where they continue to get, like, again, I hate to make early returns from a player who's yet to play a game, but from anyone who knows Thomas Houck and has seen him play, everyone says, hey, Florida, you know, got a good one relative to the whatever he was ranked 173rd or whatever when he committed to Florida. I know he's higher now, but he was like a 3-star. I think anyone who's watched him play, guys who cover recruiting, guys who cover the NBA draft that have seen him play, they say, like, yeah, that kid's way better than the 3-star he was.
Yeah.
Okay. I could say. So, like, is Florida going to be, oh, let's see if we can get an Alex Condon who actually should be a top 150 player, but no one knew who he was because he was in Australia. Like, do they get that guy and Thomas Houck playing post-grad ball? And then you go after the Zion Pullins and the big names in the transfer report. Like, you know, we'll see how that works. We'll see if that becomes the focus. But I've got to say, I respect the big swings right now, but at some point you've got to win some basketball games,
right?
Because the NIL is not going to matter when a similar NIL team is also, you know, relevant in college basketball. So, and again, it's going to be interesting too. I mean, even if Florida has say Florida had a disappointing season on the court this year, but they landed a couple five stars, where does that leave you? It certainly buys the coaching staff a couple more years, but you know, at some point you've got to have the on court results. So it's an interesting recruiting conversation after, again, the last few years of the White era was like, they kept hitting on guys between 80th and 120th in the recruiting rankings. And you're like, well, it's not a bad take. You know what I mean? Or they would get guys in the portal and you're like, yeah, that's a nice player. And you know what they were when they were at Florida? No, they were nice players.
Yeah.
But they weren't good enough to reach the goals that people had.
And I still love Kwesi Reeves. I think he's going I think he's going to be a good player, good college player still, but you're 100% right. Before I wrap up, one other thing that I wanted to talk about on kind of a long show, and we actually had a rare, really cool conversation about recruiting there. So how about that? I think it's because we were talking about like the strategy behind it. And I think we're both kind of in lockstep on like, I like the idea. Like, okay, let's land one of these kids though. And to do that, I think they're going to need to win basketball games. And, you know, if you want to get your day off to a winning start, you can do that with Athletic Greens, our newest sponsor. If you're not familiar, Athletic Greens is a daily foundational nutrition supplement, sports whole body health. Start your day with one scoop of Athletic Greens formula. It's science-driven formulation of vitamins, probiotics, and whole food source ingredients support your brain, gut, and immune system. It combines what you normally get from a bunch of individual supplements into a simpler, more effective way to raise your baseline health, support daily performance, and healthy aging. I know a lot of basketball people that swear by the stuff. If you want to try Athletic Greens, you can check it out. Hit up Florida Basketball Hour in your discount code. So, you know, cool that there's a new sponsor on board. Proud to have Athletic Greens working with us. And make sure you check that out. Another thing that I did want to ask Eric about that we're still sort of checking things out is the SEC TV schedule. And, you know, Florida, like, seems like – it's so funny because on the one hand, Eric is 100% right. On the other hand, about like, these kids don't know. On the other hand, it's like TV networks are still, like – kind of in love with Florida, but the one thing that's happened now, speaking of Muss, is like Arkansas is like the team getting that second prime spot, and then Florida gets like kind of they get slotted in third. But I saw like Florida got, you know, their fair share of ESPN games in the SEC schedule. But what was pretty fascinating to me was this is the most SEC network games that Florida has had in five seasons. They bumped. Arkansas had more this year for the first time in 5 years. So the brand, the logo, as our friends at Stadium and Gale might say, not holding as much weight to speak to Dr. Fawcett's point.
Well, yeah. And I will say, like, and again, we're now getting into like the very sports business side of things, but you know, this will be no surprise to people that the TV audience is very different than the, you know, 2024 recruiting class. Everyone kind of knows network TV audiences are skewing older and older, a challenge facing all sports, not just college sports, but professional as well, is that less and less young people are watching the games. So I do think that is worth noting as well, that the TV audiences for Florida games, because like, for any ESPN or SEC network game, they're going to skew higher in the 40 to 50 range than the teenage age people. And still, yes, the 40 to 50 year old demographic who would have access to SEC Network, like they're going to know Florida a little bit more, have a little bit more understanding of Florida's pedigree. So I still think these big TV games matter. And it's also like, it's hard not to look at these TV networks are trying to make money and put stuff on television that looks good. And Florida had a hell of a lot of rock fights last year. Yeah. And again, I know it's not even necessarily fair. Well, it's not fair to rope in the previous coaching staff to what we're currently talking about, but like there was a lot of rock fights in one coaching staff and then the coaching staff changed and there was a lot of rock fights. So like, you understand where it's coming from. And I do think that that is a result of multiple years of not very aesthetically pleasing or successful basketball. And I don't know if some of those games even have the chance to be flexed out. Maybe the Gators run through non-conference play. I don't know if it's possible for some of those games to end up on the mothership, but it is just, there are many symptoms of a team that hasn't been relevant in a couple of years. This is just one of them.
Yep. No doubt. I promise all our listeners and Eric that we will talk a lot of basketball on the next podcast. This was a weird show because like the Jarvis thing happened. There's like big recruiting news. Like it's a lot of off-court stuff. And, I'd love to talk about some things that are happening in practice. So we will be back soon after Eric's holiday and just keep cranking. Stay tuned on the Patreon where there are lots of basketball things going down, including videos coming this week on Riley Kugel and Will Richard from Eric Fawcett himself. So make sure you go to patreon.com/Florida Basketball Hour. Subscribe, y'all. Lots of different options there, lots of content. So check it out, and I'll let Eric send us away.
Yeah, last thing here. I'll just to the response of me hating recruiting, I'm just going to say I don't like the people who right now would be saying like, hey, any thoughts on Florida's 2025 and 2026 targets? Like, that's just a little tough to stomach when guys currently have lists of 18 schools. When we get into, when we get this close with like the 2024 class, I'm interested. And I'm very interested in recruiting strategy. It is just when people ask us to like break down the 2026 target that just booked an unofficial visit to Gainesville alongside his like four teammates because he plays in state and it's a historically good program. That's just not quite some
totally
not something to register right away. And
no, I didn't mean to drag you under the bus.
I just sometimes forget that we do have some newer listeners, because we know we've got got a lot of people who have been listening since the beginning. The Patreon is absolutely heating up. Neil, I know you are going to have some amazing preview work up there soon. There are videos for all of Florida's incoming players. And, if you could even go back and look at what I had to say on EJ Jarvis, if you want, way back when he committed to Florida, and some film study of him just to know what the Gators are missing out on, even if you want. But it's probably going to be a little bit more enjoyable to look at some of the incoming transfers. There is a ton there. If you want to start supporting, that stuff is all still there for you. All the back catalog, and you could watch tons of video, read tons of preview work, getting you set for the season. That is only 30 days away or something like that. So anyways, I will close it out. Thank you so much for listening. Go Gators and keep attacking closeouts.